Hi guys, and welcome to episode 11 of the Breadwinners Podcast. I'm your host, Pádraig Kilfarty. This business podcast looks into the lives of current entrepreneurs and business owners on how they've navigated their way to being the best they can be and what makes them tick. I look into their highs, their lows of their journey, and what helpful tips they can give. This week on the podcast, we talk all things sales with sales training expert Paul Ferguson and founder of Selling Today. Paul has been in the sales industry for nearly three decades and is founder of a new sales program for SMEs and business owners. We discuss all things selling, from prospecting to closing, and also some helpful tips on the dreaded cold call. Let's get into episode 11 of the Breadwinners Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Gap Property Investments, helping customers get a better return on their money who lack time or knowledge through property. Check gappropertyinvestments.com.
In business, in life, in everything, you have to sell. You have to get out there. And no one better than a man called Paul Ferguson, all the way from County Clare, but living in Galway. That's complicated, Paul. You're very welcome to the Breadwinners Podcast, and thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for the invite, and I hope I live up to your expectation.
No doubt, you definitely will, Paul, because you have an interesting story, and you've really focused your business on selling. So tell us all about it, and how did you get into that, first of all, Paul?
My sister, a long, long time ago, emigrated off to Germany, and she got involved with selling stuff to the US military over there. And eventually she got involved with selling cars, basically, that, you know, Americans go over there for a three-year tour and they need an automobile, and they need something either when they're there or when they return home. So I was in college at the time, and she said, why don't you come on over for a summer job? And, you know, and guess what? I went over and never came back.
And obviously, it's something you really enjoyed, because you stuck it out for years in that sales environment, selling cars. Maybe tell us a wee bit more exactly what you were doing at that particular time.
Well, you know, going back, it was 1991 when I went over there. And of course, you didn't have the good old internet in those days. So you really didn't know what you were going to get yourself in for. So I got to say, that was a bit of a learning curve. And so I landed there. And I was quite surprised that military bases were very advanced. They weren't kind of like what I imagined, like from watching Sergeant Bilko and people living in tents. They were like their own mini economies, you know. So these US soldiers that were over there, and I think at the time it was probably maybe 120,000 stationed in Germany alone. They were like little cities they were. They had everything. They had their own bowling alleys, their own banks. They had everything kind of convenience for them. And part of that convenience was they had a convenience to buy a car, basically a new car on base. And we were very unusual. We were like a retail operation. So we were literally in a shopping mall, you know, with a couple of desks and chairs, and we had cars out the back. And people would just stop in to get a brochure and say hello. So we weren't like kind of like your traditional setup now, where the cars are, the dealerships are miles away from people, and it's a big trip, and it's a kind of a destination sort of thing. People would conveniently come in just to talk to us about vehicles. And because we were in the right location, of course, we'd be very successful from that. So that was new to me as well. And, you know, you arrive over there, then you learn the trade, and that was very unusual, because you're selling to Americans, and I didn't know anything about cars either, so that was definitely unusual. I remember one of the first customers I talked to, and he said to me, he comes in the door and he says, hey man. And I said, what's that? And he goes, I want me a Cavalier. And I went, all right. So I'm staring at him, no idea what he's talking about, and there's a brochure rack as you come in the door. So I kind of walk up to the brochure rack, and I said to him, can you point it out? So he points it out to me, and he finds the brochure, and he says, yeah, I want me a Cavalier. And I go, oh, okay. And then he goes, it's got to have AC in it. And I'm looking at him going, what? And he goes, it's got to have AC in it. And then I said, what's AC? And he said, air conditioning. And I still didn't know what he meant. Because, you know, coming from County Clare in 1991, cars didn't have air conditioning inside them, you know. So there was a massive learning curve, it was. And Americans are really into their cars. I mean, it's like a religion, you know, Chevy versus Ford, and from all the racing. So it was a big learning curve for me. And then I went on to really enjoy it, I have to say. It was really, really great experience in my life. And I virtually did, I think it is selling for 16 years I did. And I think in that period of time, I delivered over 2,500 new cars, which is a lot of metal, I can tell you. And obviously, there's a lot of stories and a lot of customers, you know, to get to that amount.
Definitely has a lot of customers and a lot of no's getting to your yeses.
Oh, yeah.
For our listeners, it can be very frustrating. Yeah, it's great to have a business, but then you have to go and sell it. And it's a process, or maybe you can tell us more From your experience of teaching SMEs and big business, where would you start, first of all?
Well, you know, are you talking about our selling process, you know, when you first meet with the customer, or what are you talking about?
Yeah, well, suppose if you're just new in the west of Ireland or any part of Ireland, and you're listening to this podcast, and the one thing, you have a great idea, but trying to sell it, where would you start?
Oh, well, the first thing you need to know is obviously, and probably the most important thing is, you know, what's your solution and does it really match your customer's needs and wants? And if you have a great solution, something that truly is beneficial to a customer, then really that's the key to it. And really the key to selling then is not the closing. It's not trying to the arm twisting. It really is just trying to listen to what your prospects, what their needs and wants are, finding out how your solution is a match. And if it is a match, then it's very easy to make that presentation to somebody and say, hey, look, this is where I think you're, this is why it's a match, and this is why you think you should get it. And if it's that sort of common sense, it really does make a big difference when it comes to selling.
And is it that, I suppose, straightforward? A lot of people try to be all things to everybody. Is that where sometimes you see let's call it the process or the niche breaking down?
You mean being flexible? You mean like being Mr. Nice Guy to the customer, or what exactly do you mean?
I suppose more in your offering.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I sold cars, you won't believe this, we had a fixed price. They used to call it no dicker sticker. So we literally sold a car. It had a built-in discount, and that was the price, and whether you liked it or you not. So really, you were selling a value to the customer. You're really selling them the vehicle, the value, and, you know, and then you were selling a payment as well, you know, what they could afford payment-wise. But amazingly, like, you know, all those cars later, you know, you had to stop the customer as they came in the door and say, look, we're different from Safeside dealers because this is what we do. You know, we're going to give you a fair deal up front. You don't have to worry about haggling, and this is the way it is. And once you set that expectation, then a lot of customers, for example, don't, it's not always about price for them. You know, once they put their mind at ease, if they're getting a fair price, then they can move on to kind of what they really want in life. But they do, I think, you know, people think that there's an expectation out there that, you know, they should always be trying to bargain and to get the best price possible. And that probably then takes the, I think, a lot of the fun or enjoyment when it comes to buying things, because there's always that feeling in the background you might be getting ripped off.
Where do you see things breaking down for people who are trying to sell? Maybe sales directors, owners of businesses, you know, getting frustrated.
I would say you have to make sure your salespeople have a sales process. And you hear this time and time again. So they have to have a proper structured sales process from the minute they meet a client, and, you know, a structure how they're going to, you know, learn about the client, you know, do that so-called blueprinting, how they're going to make that presentation, how they're going to go for a close. And they have to have a proper structure all the way through. And if your salespeople aren't following the structure or don't have a structure, then you're never going to be successful. And you should always tweak the structure. So, you know, tweak the structure to how your business and how it works. So if this doesn't work, then you make a little tweak on it. But it's so important to have that structure and have that playbook. So every time you bring in new salespeople, you're able to train them and bring them to a level that you expect. And I think that's it. And I think if you think that just because you hire people because they have previous experience in sales and they're going to get you the results, I think you're being very naive.
So give us one of those structures now, Paul. We're getting value out of you straight away. Structuring a sales process, I suppose, we'll take cars. That's something you
know. Yeah. You know, we were taught at the start, of course, you would want to make what we call the favorable approach or get into comfortable conversation. So, you know, first thing you want to do is obviously, you know, get a little bit of chit-chat with somebody, you know, where they're from, you know, how they find it so far. So you want to obviously get the person comfortable. You don't want to go straight away in asking sort of questions, you know, about, you know, what their needs are. And then once the person's comfortable and they're liking you, because, you know, half of selling is about the person liking you, then you're going to move into what the most important part of the sale, and it's probably seen as the most boring part, but that's really going to be that qualification stage. You know, that's the stage of discovery where you're going to try and learn as much as possible about your prospect, you know, what their true needs and wants are. And, you know, you're going to ask certain open-ended questions that are going to bring that to the front. You know, so if I was selling the car, you're going to say, do you want a two-door, a four-door? You want automatic? You want manual? You know, do you have a family? How many seats do you need? You know, you're going to try and learn as much as possible and give your time for your prospect to speak a lot and kind of tell you what they're all about. And then once you kind of got that information in your mind, then you're able then to look at your product line and look at your services and say, okay, based on what they're telling me, I think this is the most best solution for them, or this is the best solution. And then that's...
Sorry to interrupt you, but is that somewhere you see that the listening stage? We all do it. We don't listen.
Yeah.
And is that something you see what a lot of people do wrong?
Oh, no doubt. There's a couple of things you might have is, you know, they say God gave us what, 2 ears and one mouth for a reason. So, yeah, I think salespeople, maybe by character, some of them are of course, very extroverted, and they will find themselves rambling on. Some of them will, you know, and that's something they need to think about is just ask the questions. And regardless if you've heard the answers and you know what the answer is going to be, you've just got to keep going through the motions and really, really let that sort of relationship go. Because it really sends a signal to your prospect that you're listening to, you know, and you actually care about what, you know, what they're talking about. And then increase your bond with that person as well, which is so important. So, yeah, definitely listening is definitely a very important thing. And then, you know, you'll get things as well where some salespeople, you know, get then too entrenched in their selling sequence. And you have a customer in front of them waving their credit card in front of them and they're ready to buy. And guess what? You know, they just want to go through this system that has served them well. So you got to take everything with a pinch of salt. But I would say for the vast majority of people, you know, it's so much easier just to go through your system and then, you know, see if there's suddenly the person ready to buy, then shut up, take the money and then move on. And that's how you do it.
Take me back to the questions, because I'm intrigued by that. You know, those questions that unlock a sale, what are they or what would you perceive them to be?
We have kind of five categories that you're trying to find out about a prospect, and they may not be relevant to everybody's service or product, but so the first thing you want to find out is the person's needs, okay? And the needs are what we would call a deal breaker. So you have to satisfy that person's needs no matter what. So if I was selling the car, their needs could be they need a four-door because guess what? They've got a family. Yeah. Their needs could be they could have 7-passenger seating because they've got, you know, 6 in the family and they need something like that. So they're deal breakers. And then you have a thing called wants. And they're the things that are nice to have. You know, so I want to have leather or I want to have an automatic. They may make that person happy, but depending on the price, it's not a complete deal breaker. So you'd find out the wants, but you wouldn't lead the witness. You know, you just ask nice questions. You know, what is it you want from a new car? You know, what did you have on your last vehicle that you'd like this time around? Or, you know, and then you kind of ask certain questions to kind of bring that out of them. And the next thing we want to do is we want to find about cash. We call it cash questions just to find out how much that person wants to pay. So we wouldn't necessarily talk about a cash price. We really talk about paying the terms, you know, what, how much they want to pay per month, you know, what's their ideal monthly payment. And, you know, trying to put that in the right area. And then you have authority, of course, you know, can they make a decision, you know, and if they can't make a decision, then you don't want to continue on making a full presentation because that person's not in a position to make a decision. And that could be their current car could be an authority or their spouse could be an authority. And then finally, we always try to look for a thing called a DBM, and it's called a dominant buying motive. And that's kind of like the most singular thing that's going to cause a person to buy. Very hard to ask the question to find out what it is, but it might just come up. You know, they might mention it a few times. You know, they need four-wheel drive. They're going back to Colorado and they need to have that. And then you can kind of make sure you have that. So then when you have that kind of information and you put it all together, then you're thinking about what's the ideal product? What is the right one that's going to get across the line? What's going to match that payment? What's going to give them the four doors and so on and so forth? And then once you have that in your mind, then you'll then make that presentation. You'll say, look, based on what you're telling me, I'm going to show you this product. And the reason I'm going to show you this product, and then you just recap why I'm showing it to you, because you told me you wanted this, this, and this. And this is the reason why we're going down this path. So it sounds very logical, but you'd be surprised. A lot of people just pick up their product and then just try to sell it on the features, but not really selling it on what the customer wants to hear. So if one customer wants to hear about safety and this, that, and the other, you'll make a presentation based on that. Another person just wants to know the color of the equipment, how much it costs per month. And guess what? Your presentation is going to be based on that as well. So it's just keeping it very, very simple.
That's interesting. I suppose you've experience of selling across the world and selling into different areas and different countries. What changes have you seen there of the process or the sales technique?
I have, you know, of course, there's a lot of people out there. Whoops. There's a lot of people out there who will claim that, you know, that selling, I suppose, is evolving. And to a part, it is evolving a small amount, but really the big major change in selling has been called solution selling, which, you know, really listen to the customer going from there. And there's all people coming out now that are saying that there's a new way to do it. But generally, it's all pretty much the same way with just really a different spin on it. So what I have seen, though, is people starting to adopt a more professionalized way of doing it, you know, being more systematic. So rather than going with that structure, like I said, it's very sort of product, you know, focused where this is the features, this is the benefits, and the customer's expected just to list off feature and benefits. People are starting to adopt this kind of solution selling.
Is that something you see that you can actually miss a sale at times because of maybe those factors that you're actually not adhering to them. Would that be fair?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's for sure. I mean, if the basic thing where what somebody can afford per month and you're trying to sell them something that they can't afford, obviously no-brainer. Or, you know, and that's it's so, yeah, absolutely. It makes the deal a lot more difficult, it does. Really, then when it comes to closing, you know, once that person truly understands that the product that you're trying to sell them really does kind of match what they're looking for, it's very hard for them to say no. Because logically, this is kind of the best thing I have for you based on what you're telling me, not what I'm telling you. So, yeah, so it really alleviates the kind of pain when it comes to closing the customer out. I mean, naturally, there's going to be customers who are going to have objections because suddenly, all of a sudden, they've gone from information to suddenly be asked for money. Maybe they didn't expect that. And maybe their reaction a lot of times is maybe tell you a little bit of a white lie or give you a little smoke screen, as we say. But the reality is that's just, you know, once you get past that and you've maybe overcome that very simple objection, then you can then get them into what you need to do is to close them. And if you can't close them then you let them go and you give them a call later on. So not everything is about beating somebody over the head. You have to kind of play it by ear. You got to get a sense of how that person is, whether this is the right time to close the person or not.
Taking you back to digital, Simos, you touched a little bit on it there, and everybody is on about digital media. It's a huge medium at the minute. But you make the case that you still need to have the belly to belly.
Yeah, I think they can work beautifully hand in hand. And, you know, I'm still a big firm believer that people buy from people. So unless you've got this huge, massive marketplace that has tens of millions of people into and, you know, you can make a living out of 1%, then digital sales should be the way you should go. But if you have a much smaller marketplace, then really digital sales might help you, you know, for people to become aware of what your product and aware of what you do. But nothing's going to beat that time when you can get belly to belly with somebody. It makes such a huge difference. And if you can't get belly to belly, then you do it over the phone. That's your next line of defense. And then your final line of defense from there is maybe an email, you know, but really it's nothing beats either phone and definitely face to face.
You mentioned the pause button, as we call it. A lot of people just hit the phone, just cannot use it. I know is there a structure? Is there tips you can give us?
You know, there's a lot of people, unfortunately, started to believe that millennials, you know, especially when you're hiring new millennium salespeople, that because they're so used to WhatsApping and they're not used to that connection with people, that they're very hard to train on that. And that was sort of a challenge that we looked at. But the reality is that the vast majority of people don't like making cold calls, let's just say. Okay, so I should hope there's no problem with calling somebody that you know. Yeah, you know, if you've had a contact that you're following up on, you already have that contact and you have that reason why you're doing that. But if it's pure cold calling, yeah, there's definitely things that can help you. And one thing is to do them is in blocks. So we all know that, you know, if you set your day up to say, I'm going to do this between this time and this time, and then you take out your phone numbers and you literally just run through those numbers in that period of time, then you're going to get that out of the way. And if it's possible, then try to do it as early as possible. It's not always possible between business hours, but definitely to get the harder things out of the way is definitely a thing. Another way to do it is to make sure you've got a little bit of a script. I'm not talking about reading it off. You sound like you're on a script, but certainly when you first start out, you know, make sure you got something that you're going to say that it sounds right and sounds natural, but at least then it gives you that into that person. Because
give us some nuggets there, Paul. Come on, our listeners are looking for some. What kind of a what kind of script? Hello, how you doing? You know, you're from Donegal. You could be from Kerry, you could be from anywhere. Well, you know yourself, just a scripted, you know, a scripted sales process isn't.
Well, the one that works for me, and I really works for me, and it works because of my personality, is called disarming honesty. And I just tell the person, listen, the reason why I'm calling is I want to sell you something. And that blows people away every time. Yeah, because they're waiting, you know, for the big long speech. And I say, the reason why I'm calling you is because I want to sell you something. And I'm sure you hear this all the time, but I've got something that I believe is going to be very beneficial to you. So if you've got a minute of your time, I can tell you what it's all about. And that way blows people away because it disarms them and it's honest. And I find that allows me then to get into the conversation, because a lot of times when I make my cold calls, I'm cold calling. I know that they have a need. So I know it's not a complete cold call. So I kind of understand what their need is. I've done my little bit of homework on them. So it makes it so much easier. And like I explained to you, the one that we're doing now at the moment is that we start with that disarming honesty, and they say, look, we've got a little video for you. And what I'll do is I'll email you the video, and then you can make up your own mind after you watch a video if you think this is the right service for you or not. And then a lot of times I'll say, okay, cool. And I said, let me give you an email address. I'll send it to you, and I promise it won't bug you. And then boom, we'll send them off the video. So that works very well, because then the video then does the selling for me, but without the kind of the high pressure, and without, you know, it, they can do it where they feel, you know, they don't feel under pressure. And then, of course, they're actually going to listen to it as well and be curious to see that maybe if it could turn them or not.
I suppose that's joining both strategies together, your digital and your standard phone call.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
And you as a business owner as well actually do cold calls, is that?
Absolutely, yeah. So we obviously would love to get face-to-face. Obviously, we know that's our best line. But sometimes we go into some businesses and we just can't get a hold. You know, it's either you're going to meet the gatekeeper, or, you know, the manager's not here, or, you know, and then we don't want to keep calling back. So we have a kind of a, we'll go in best, we'll try and go in with a face-to-face. If we can't, then we'll take the phone number, and then we'll try that cold call which we just spoke about there. If we can't get the phone number, we can only get the email, then we'll try it on an email situation. Obviously, email is the hardest one to really, really penetrate and really get to somebody. So it becomes a numbers game on it. So it's definitely if you can get face to face. But if you can't, then obviously then the next thing you want to do is just have something well worked out on for the cold call. So that example there with getting the video to do it for me, you know, going in with disarming the person has been reasonably successful for us.
A couple of things I always come across is Monday morning motivation. And the mindset is great.
Yeah.
Is another one that really kicks into a salesman. Because if you're confident, or saleswoman, I should say, if you're confident, outgoing, the mindset's right, you're going to be fairly successful in sales. But Monday morning comes, and you have to go after it once again,
yeah.
Paul.
Yeah.
What can the salesperson do to get over that?
You know, there's certain triggers some people use. So some people are triggered by audio, for example. So, you know, playing some music, for example, and playing certain songs that might get you going. Sounds a bit corny, but it definitely works. And it certainly worked for me over the years, you know, putting on certain music in the car. And as I was driving along, you know, that would sort of help to invigorate me a little bit. Another way to do it is obviously kind of, you know, structure to maybe do something fun on a Monday rather than something that's going to be hard. So, you know, so it could be where you're trying to set yourself up, you know, to achieve something early in the week, so that you can kind of get that out of the way to do some more difficult things. But no matter what, everybody gets a little bit up and down. Just, you know, that's it. And having a goal is so important. And so I can't speak for everybody. You know, in the organizations I was with, for example, you know, we had very, very good goals. We were commission only salespeople, so we were pretty hungry. Yeah, guess what? If we didn't sell, we didn't eat. So that was a good motivation. But we also had goals, you know, a lot of recognition awards, and salespeople love recognition awards. So, you know, organizations would have salesperson of the year, and there are little things, you know, if they're good recognition awards, they can help to keep people motivated over a longer period of time. You know, good feedback on results as well, you know, from month to month, if they're getting good feedback from their organization, you know, some sort of sales board. And they might sound corny, but they do work, because a lot of salespeople are very recognition orientated, you know, otherwise they wouldn't be doing the job. So there are things that help as well.
So you're saying a big ego is in full drive within a salesperson? Is that
there's in our experience, and again, I'll only go on what I've dealt with. And in our experience, we used to hire two types of salespeople. So we had what we call people who are high drive, and they call them a high D. And there are people who are very materialistic orientated, you know, swayed by big paychecks. And they're quite the doers, and they'll generally find themselves rising up in organizations as well. And they'll probably step in everybody's heads to get there, but they make good salespeople because they're very, very motivated people. And then the other type of salesperson we would hire is somebody called a high, which is a high influence, and they're very recognition orientated. So they're very much into the suit, the nice car, the job title. And those two, we would definitely recognition oriented one, and then the other one, we would then try and motivate by money, bonuses, the holidays, sales competitions with materialistic endings to them. So they're the two things. If you're running sales organizations, it definitely work. If you look at your salespeople and trying to recognize, are you dealing with high I or high D people?
Great tip there, Paul. I have to say, I've just noted that one down. Something you can throw into your business straight away. Tell us more about Paul. You touched on it that you got into sales just by seeing your sister doing it. But was it ever a career you thought?
Oh God, no.
That's the one for me.
I never thought so because I was young and dumb, but all my friends thought so. All my friends go, yeah, of course you ended up in sales. You know what I mean? Like, I never saw myself that way. Obviously you don't have a good conception of yourself when you're that young, you know? But I have to say, as luck would have it, guess what? I ended up being a high I person. So it ended up working out really well for me. I think the part, I did the sales for a while, but I tell you the part that was most rewarding for me is when I went into sales management. And I did the sales for like 17 years. And then I was in sales management for the last 12 years. And I have to say that was very rewarding. That's when you're really trying to build a team and you're trying to bring a team up to the sort of level of performance. And then you really learn about yourself, because up until then, you're kind of dependent on yourself and yourself being successful. And now you're dependent on a team to be successful and before you're successful. And I have to say that was in itself very rewarding, especially when you bring in new salespeople and you watch them then become successful in front of you. And you know you've had a hand in it. You know you coached them and how you brought them along. That was, I would say, a lot more rewarding than pretty much than that period of time when I was a salesperson.
So was there any days like the old story that Alex Ferguson was in the dressing room with the Manchester United players, they started to throw the hairdryer? Is that advisable?
You got to pick your battles. So one thing for sure, I would never ever do it in front of other people. So if I had something to say, I'd take the person off for a coffee somewhere and we'd have our chat. And I was very good. I used to give what they used to call a shit sandwich. So I would always start with a compliment. So I'd always tell the person the compliment. So I would say, look, we're looking at your business and this is what you're doing great. And then that would then, you know, make that person relax and their arms become unfolded as I'm doing my review with them. And then after they're listening to me and I tell them all the good things they do, and I'd say, however, and then I would then obviously tell them where I think, you know, they could improve. And doing it that way served me well because, you know, they didn't feel I was criticizing, you know, so they felt they were a little more open to what I was going to say from there. So that's how I conduct my business most of my time. Did I ever have to freak out with somebody? Yeah, absolutely. But I'd say 9 times out of 10, I can absolutely hold my cool. And once in a blue moon, then maybe you know, someone rubs me up the wrong way. And but that was probably extremely rare.
16 years or longer, sorry.
Yeah.
You said that you're away selling cars into the military. And then you come back to Ireland.
No, I did that. So I was with the same company for 28 years, 16 selling, 12 years as manager. And then after 5 years of being a regional manager, country manager of Italy, then they promoted me then to a European manager. And then things really kind of, you know, bigger picture stuff. Now you're running 6 managers and 110 salespeople. And, you know, you're really starting to look at other parts of the business, things you didn't consider when you were a sales manager and certainly not as your salesperson. You know, you're really thinking about the profitability of how you're going to bring the profit in, you know, really looking at sort of the big picture stuff. So that was extremely interesting as well. But one thing I never lost was my ability to be able to get into the trenches and you know, get my elbows out and help the guys out, you know. And if I had to jump in and sell a car one day, guess I could do it. To much the grin of the salespeople, because I still had it going on, you know.
So tell me about that. I suppose, is that something that you really enjoy as a process? Just by you actually telling me about it, and you're actually setting up another company on the side at the minute.
Yeah.
And you're back in the trenches again.
Yeah.
After 28 years of selling, you thought, oh no, you roll your eyes and you go, do I have to do that? But it's something you enjoy, is it?
Yeah, I think deep down inside, you're always selling. And if you're a good sales manager, you're selling all the time. And I think any manager, forget about sales manager, you're selling. You're selling to get your employees to do things that you want them to do. And so you are in selling mode no matter what. You're always convincing, and you know, and that's just the way it is. So I don't think that changes whether I'm up in front of a room making a sales presentation, which is a form of selling, or as I said, you know, getting someone to do things a certain way. It's all selling at the end of the day. But I have been enjoying it now again, getting back out in the trenches again. It's been a while and I'm doing it kind of, but it's definitely been enjoyable, that's for sure.
I came across you on LinkedIn, obviously, and just as being involved in sales for a long time yourself, I'm always intrigued what it takes to get that extra, you know, an extra bit of leverage that you can possibly get. You've come back to Ireland now, since you've gone away, and you've set up a new product, a new idea for SMEs and large businesses as well. Tell us a little more about that and how that works and what people can do there.
Yeah, so but I'll get into the long and the short of it, I returned back home and I thought, you know what, after living in that bubble, it'll be easy for me to find myself another nice job again. You know, I've got great experience and I've done this, that and the other. And then I got back to Ireland and the reality is not quite what I imagined, you know, unfortunately. So I had to come off my high horse a little bit. And one of the things I realized that I was very good at was at the sales training part of it. So I said, you know what, let me see if I can go into that element. It was part of what I did, but it wasn't really my main function of what I've been doing for the last 28 years, but it was something I was good at. And, you know, so I started a sales training company up here in Ireland called Selling Today. And pretty much I spent a few months really kind of coming up with really good material, things that would suit here for Ireland, trying to get away from the car sales, trying to build, you know, a model that would, you could pretty much bolt into a B2B or B2C company. So trying to do that sort of behind it. And so that's pretty much, you know, so I got that achieved. And then I set about obviously going ahead then starting to do the sales courses. And I got a few of them under my belt, quite enjoyed doing them. But I found there was a little thing holding me back. It was a little bit repetitious for me, which is, you know, I suddenly started to feel, geez, I'm doing the same thing over and over again, which is something, you know, that I'm not really used to, because in sales, believe it or not, everything's changing all the time. There's always a new customer, there's always a new customer. There's always something that's going on. So that was one thing that was playing in the back of my mind. And then COVID-19 kicks in and guess what? There's no more, you know, of meeting together and doing all that. So I have to say that just as I was just kind of tipping into it, it definitely has changed things around for me. So I've decided to diversify a little bit. So I've opened up another company at the moment, which is getting back to the trenches of selling. And it's a software solution and it's really fit for COVID-19. So I'm looking forward to getting my teeth sunk into that as well.
Adapting. And I suppose that's something that a lot of salespeople and people that are in business and entrepreneurship, that they adapt. And is that something that just comes natural to you?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think it's come natural, but I've also think that over the years of being managed by different sales managers, it's something that they've instilled into me. So whether I remember the exact words or not, but you know, I remember as a salesperson, you know, 1 week everything's rosy, all the troops are there, and the next thing they're deployed off to Iraq or they're going to Afghanistan. And you've gone from feast to famine, you know, and, you know, everything was hunky-dory and now they're gone for 9 months. So I remember, yeah, adapting and then suddenly having to go out and start prospecting and standing in front of the PX every day. So I think adapting is so important. If you sit around and feel sorry for yourself, it's all over. And even, you know, when you're selling on a month-to-month basis, you know, which is so important, you know, if the first week is slow, you really can't just sit around and wait for it to happen. You have to make it happen. And it sounds so cliche, but it's just so true. It is, you know, you really have to be on it, looking at it, saying, okay, it isn't coming in. I need to go and do something about it.
Is that called shaking the trees as well?
Yeah, you could call it shaking the trees, but yeah, it's all, I think, all the same sort of language. And you really have to look at yourself and whatever sales your job you're in right now. And if you start making the mistake of blaming everybody around you because it's quiet and, you know, there's nothing you can do, then you really got to ask yourself maybe if you're in the right job or not. And that's the brutal truth with it, because there's always things we could do. There's always people we can call. There's always extra things that we can do to help us then be successful. And then what I found here with the COVID-19 thing and successful selling today was, okay, Paul, this is something you could be good at, but you don't know how long this is going to go on for. So it's time to do something, you know, and do something different, or at least try to do something that will bring home the bacon for you.
Was there a long conversation there with yourself, Paul? I mean, that one, and the process there of
Yeah, I think there was a part of me, and of course I haven't said goodbye to it, but there was a part of me saying, geez, I just spent the last year of my life kind of putting this together and staying on this sort of path. And you're going like, and now I have to go on another path. And, you know, is that a sign of failure? Or do I park it to the side? And then, you know, and so there's almost a fear of loss. But then I found, which was great, I launched my first, in Galway last weekend, I launched my first kind of salesman from it. We hired 5 salespeople, put them in a room, and I was pulling all the stuff together, guess what, of all the sales training that I've been doing over the last year, and I was able to put it all together. So I was telling myself, all right, well, maybe that wasn't a complete waste. You know, I was able to take the transferable skills that I was doing from that, applying to this, applying to making the videos, the promo videos, all the stuff that I was doing on LinkedIn, I was able to take that very quickly and use those skill sets in order to apply it to this new part of the business. So in a way, it's, you have to kiss the project goodbye, but you've got to move on for your sanity and then take and be grateful for the skills that you picked up from it.
the overall flow of your conversation, you're a fairly relaxed kind of a guy, but when you dig deep on that, Paul, you obviously have little structures in place to keep yourself in that frame, and maybe you might divulge some of them to us, because I have come across a couple of fiery salesmen and managers in my time. So what tips could you give our listeners maybe to take things maybe not as serious?
Geez, yeah. I mean, you think about that. I mean, you know, you hear all the corny stuff, like, you know, take a deep breath. But yeah, I suppose there's a fine line there is. Yeah, there's a fine line between enjoying something and really, you know, or at the other stage where it becomes so encompassing for you that as soon as something goes wrong, you're ready to blame everybody about it. And you've just got to find that fine line. You know, it can be a great industry and can be a great business to be in and enjoying that part of it. But you've got to be able to relax a little bit. You've got to be able to say, hey, you know. And sometimes the pressure comes from their bosses. You know, you ring them up and and this happens. You know, you're ringing up and one day you're looking for recognition and a pat on the back. And the next day they're ringing up to see if you've got any new leads or do you make a sale, and you almost feel like crap because you don't. And then you put pressure on yourself. So you really got to understand that you're doing it for yourself. And if you can really put this in your mind that you're trying to make yourself successful, and you're not other people, and you know, then you can really start to own it. But I think if you start really, you know, putting pressure on your neck or putting your back because, you know, you feel the weight of the world's on your shoulders because everybody has this expectation of you, then really you've stopped doing it for yourself. And you know, so it's so important to really believe that you're trying to make yourself successful and you're the one that's going to enjoy the success from this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and funny, you just reminded me of an old tip an old sales manager of mine gave me, and he says you're actually working for yourself. And I thought, whenever you get that bit of advice and you take it on board and away you go, you know, obviously it can help you. But if you're in that negative mindset, suppose what can you do there, Paul, and how have you got your team out of that?
Yeah, well, I used to say to all my salesmen, especially if I was sitting down with a salesperson that was going through, like I say, he was going through a hard streak, and sometimes it's self-inflicted. Guess what? It's wine, women, and song, and they're not focused on the business, and you know, they're taking their eye off the ball. And I can't fix so much of that. I'm not their psychologist. You know what I mean? You know, I can acknowledge that with them. We can have a laugh and a joke about it, and you know, we can see if that's the root. But let's just say, you know, I used to say to all my salesmen, said, look, if I was a doctor, you know, my medicine for you would be a deal. Yeah, so if you could go ahead and sell something right now, guess what? You're going to feel like $1 million again. And so for me, the quick medicine to all of this was to try and find some business, some quick business to allow that person to feel their confidence again. Easier said than done. But I would always try to remind them of that, because then they would suddenly laugh at me and they go, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Because yeah, so then they realize, obviously, that they're only getting down on themselves because they haven't done any business. And that's kind of silly, you know, in a way, you know. So then when they realized that it was, you know, then it was easier for them to do that. Because a lot of salespeople happen is when they get a bit too much pressure under them, the customer can feel it. You know, they're either offering the close too early or, you know, too quickly, you know, but there's just like this sense from the customer that the salesman's too desperate. And when the salesman comes across desperate, and guess what? They're not going to get the sale. So you have to kind of like, you know, chill. And then you see those salesmen at the top of their game. And guess what? Because they're selling those, they're so chilled with their customers that, you know, the customer's feeling, does this person want to sell me or not? I don't know. You know, and they don't feel that they're under pressure. So it's definitely very important that you have the right mindset, you know. And, you know, exercise is a great thing. You know, getting out, running, walking. You know, that's definitely a big help, that is. Eating right. I know these are all corny things to say, but they really do make a difference. They do. But trying to be healthy, you know, they say, you know, a healthy body is a healthy mind. So that certainly helps as well. But definitely you want to do is take it with a pinch of salt, you know, chill out, relax. All right. Don't take all the world and pressure on your shoulders, and then realize that, you know, as soon as you do sell something, you're going to feel as right as rain again.
Just do the calls.
Do the calls, man. Yeah. Do the calls. Take the no's. One of the ones I have is, you know, is take no's, you know, count how many no's it takes to get a yes. So if at an average it takes you to take, say, 20 no's to get a yes, for example, when you're doing cold calling, then at least, you know, as you're making you're getting your no's, you're getting closer to a yes. And again, it sounds kind of, you know, a bit corny, but it really works. If you're on no 15, you know that a no, a yes is around the corner. So you're working through your no's so you can get to a yes, rather than taking it personally every time that you're getting a no. So easier said than done, but it's definitely something that helps.
Mind controls a lot of things, Paul. And well, we've spoken nearly an hour about selling and sales tips and thoroughly enjoyed it. And suppose we didn't get in behind the story behind Paul. We got into a little bit of it, more of his career and everything else. But Paul, some fantastic tips. And suppose what I do with everybody when I bring them on the podcast, I thank them for their time. And well, suppose for your consultancy there for the last hour for our listeners, but they've got loads out of it. I know I have anyway, but give us three top tips if you're heading out tomorrow to start your business. Where would you go in the sales world? And maybe tell us three things that you would prescribe.
Well, you put me on the spot now. You've actually top three tips. Okay, so if you're a salesperson, so tip number one for you, like I said to you, is listen. Yeah, listen to what your prospect has to say. Okay. And only then, when you're absolutely sure you understand what they're about, then you can start doing your talking. So that would be my first tip. And then the second tip I have for you would be is that, you know, if you get a no, you know, don't take it as a hell no. That sometimes it's just a no is just basically someone's reaction. And, you know, and then just use that basically to find out why that person's giving you a no. So if someone says, hey, look, I really don't want the product. That's when, you know, obviously a good reason for saying that. Do you mind if I ask what it is? Very relaxed, you know, and then find out, you know, how then the person can maybe give you the objection. If they give you an objection, then you want to do is just make sure it's a real objection. If it says, the person says, I just don't like the colors. Well, okay, well, just supposing for a moment, you know, color wasn't concerned, then, you know, in your opinion, do you feel this would be the right product for you? And then you're trying to smoke out from them, basically. So that's something that's worked for me. And then the other one that definitely works is follow up. You know, if you're dealing with people and you're taking leads and you have a follow up system on them, you know, just don't give up after one call. You know, it's I think statistically that, you know, most sales are made when more than five follow ups are done. So you have to follow up. You can't just go after low-hanging fruit. And I think that's always been the biggest frustration with me and when I was a sales manager as well, is my salesperson's taken a good lead. They spent all this time with the customer, made a great presentation. The person wasn't ready to buy there, and they do a minimum amount of follow-up afterwards, which I don't understand why that is, you know. So, you know, be committed to follow-up, you know, make sure that you and your prospect are committed together. When you're going to call, why you're going to call, and you actually do what you say you're going to do. So if you agree with them or you contract with them, you're going to call them Friday at 5 o'clock, then you do that. Simple as that. And you call them on Friday at 5 o'clock and they're still a bit unsure, then you say, let me call you Thursday, next Thursday at 5 o'clock. But you just keep doing it until the person says, no, get lost. Okay, so follow up is definitely. So I think that's your three there. But a question before you go, I just want to get your own advice on that. And do you see follow up an issue here in Ireland as far as your experience with salespeople?
I think follow-up is a problem for a lot of sales processes that I see anyway.
Yeah.
And I do see a lot of issues when it comes to actual process and figuring out the process, because I think there's a culture in Ireland anyway, maybe in the UK, is that they don't allow the salesperson enough time to actually commit, you know, the adultery of not getting the sale, which is one, of course,
yeah.
But the time and the correct market and industry knowledge is quite important as
yeah.
well. And I think sometimes you can run down and stick a salesman into a job and just expect them to
fire away.
Do really, really well without a lot of the important things discussed, first of all, which is strategy. So
yeah, for sure.
Big issue. Paul, where can people find out more about you?
LinkedIn's a good one for me. My page is Paul C. Ferguson, you know, the / LinkedIn thing. So you could find me on LinkedIn. You can, or you can check out my website, which is successfulsellingtoday.com. From there, you can then find any of my social channels, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or my LinkedIn or my YouTube, and you can go from there then.
And loads of free videos.
Tons of videos out there, all little 2 or 3 minute sales nuggets. I don't try and spend too long on it. And, you know, definitely worth a watch, that's for sure.
Paul, it's been a brilliant hour. So thanks very much for joining us on the 11th edition of the Breadwinners Podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by Gap Property Investments, helping customers get a better return on their money who lack time or knowledge through property. Check gapropertyinvestments.com. That's all from today's Breadwinners Business Podcast. Many thanks for all the downloads during the week. I hope today's podcast was useful. Please tag me over on our Facebook page. And from myself, Pádraig Hilfirthy, and the Breadwinner Podcast team, we'll talk to you next week.